Next one
So we go to, did they?
I mean, they
So
just look
starting, right?
Can you have a pro ten?
Yeah, they can just talk among them. They can just figure it out amongst themselves. A feature or something.
That's almost a that we've been past almost like a,
Are there any current subcommittees of the planning commission? Yeah. Yeah, planning commission. Definitely. One less thing, right? Yes. Kind of sounds like it's pretty consciousness that is.
That's kind of a DTM, right?
Yeah,
I am. We wrote to the
sushi. Yes. Yeah. We got
it. I like it.
So what's the next year or what?
You're the head dog now.
Wow.
I see. We're all like, we have to get comfortable.
Okay.
The back sled dog.
Did I not respond to an email? Okay. We're really happy that you're here. Because there's no chair and no vice chair. We're concerned it's the chaos that might ensue.
Yeah. All out battle.
Right?
Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting, the City of Tucson's Planning Commission. My name is Chris Ortiz-Pino, and I'm the chair of the Planning Commission. The responsibilities of this body are to advise the Mayor and Council and the Planning and Development Services Department on the adoption of long-range plans, policies, specific plans, and regulations that affect the land use and development. Will staff call the roll, please?
Certainly. Vice Chair Kinney? Commissioner Lampo? Commissioner Lane? Commissioner McKenzie?
Present.
Chair Ortiz-Pino?
Present.
Commissioner Schwartz?
Here.
Commissioner Small?
Present.
Commissioner Walczak?
Present online.
Commissioner Wellett?
Present also online.
Commissioner Young? And Commissioner Zagier?
Present.
I'll let the record reflect that a quorum is present.
Excellent. Thank you all. Next call for the item number 2, approval of legal action report for January 29th, 2025. The chair would entertain a motion for a motion.
A motion to approve.
I'll go ahead and second.
Have a motion and a second. Okay, so any discussion? Any issues? All in favor of those approving the legal action report from January 29th, 2025, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All those opposed say nay. Hearing none, legal action report is approved. I'd like to go ahead and jump into the next item, number three, PDSD 2024 development metrics and trends.
Thank you, Chair Ortiz-Pino. I'm Corin Manning, Interim Director of the Department of Planning and Development Services, and we wanted to provide the Commission with a quick kind of snapshot of some of our department's achievements over the past year, as well as some of the development trends that we saw in our permitting data. And some of this was inspired by your discussion last week about the Community Corridors tool, and the Commission had a lot of, I think, great suggestions about evaluating that tool in a year or 2 years, several years down the road, to see how effective is this tool. And we realized we really probably should be sharing more regularly some of the development trends that we are seeing in our metrics and what development patterns we're seeing across the city to help inform the commission's deliberations and decision making about future code amendments and other changes you guys are considering. So wanted to provide a quick overview first of some of the kind of big top line items PDSD worked on last year, and then our development metrics as well. Let's see. Oh. So 2024, some of the major items PDSD worked on was the launch of our Casita Model Plan Library. This launched early last year, and we ended the year with 9 pre-approved model plans. This, of course, comes from a code amendment that Planning Commission reviewed and recommended about 4 years ago, almost now, in 2021. And that was a pretty big change in our zoning code at the time to allow accessory dwelling units across the city. Since then, it has now been adopted statewide. There was actually legislation last year to require all jurisdictions, I think of over 75,000, to allow casitas. So Tucson really kind of paved the way there. And because we were so far ahead of other cities on the code side of things, we've spent some of our time and resources over the past few years looking at what is working with the code and kind of the broader picture around casitas, and really saw a need for not just the zoning change, but other tools to make it easier to build casitas, which is why we created this model plan library through a design competition to really streamline that process for homeowners. Usually the folks building casitas are homeowners, very little familiarity with the development process, design and development process. So this gives people a starting place to look at some of the options and features a wider array of casitas, from like a 350 square foot micro unit to a 2-bedroom casita. So that's something that we're really excited to see now kind of taking hold in the community, and we see a lot more plans coming in using these model plans. So we've seen a real increase in permitting. So just want to show the impact of some of the code changes that have come through the Planning Commission. Some of our other major accomplishments last year is expanding our permit review lanes. So we have different review lanes to expedite the review of simple permits. So we have a fast lane, for example, and a express lane. So we offer same day permitting for residential solar. That's our express lane, and some trade permits, electrical reconnects, et cetera. A fast lane that's usually about 15-day review process for commercial tenant improvements, for example, and some other smaller projects. And then our standard review times is about 30 days. So we've been able to expand that and put more project types in our fast lane last year. Obviously, Plan Tucson was a major focus for 2024. We'll discuss that tonight, so I won't say much about that. And I mentioned already Solar App, which is part of our permit review lanes. Transfer that platform. We had shared that with the county, and last year we created a city led platform for Solar App. Several code amendments came through the Planning Commission to promote more housing options. So that was the ADU amendments that were driven by the state legislation, as well as changes to allow another option for adaptive reuse of multifamily, to allow multifamily use in commercial or office buildings. And then we had We enjoyed proclaiming May Building Safety Month, did a lot of community education and awareness around the importance of the permitting process and the building safety industry. We made a number of improvements to our customer service processes. We debuted a new online navigator that helps applicants select the correct permit type for their applications. And then PDSD was honored to receive a Common Ground Award of Distinction from MPA, the Metropolitan Pima Alliance, for our Casita Model Plan Library, as well as our dashboard and some of our process improvements. So that's kind of the year in review in terms of major projects and accomplishments. I want to get into a little more of the metrics from last year. So we did have a very high volume of permits. We issued 11,000 permits last year, which is actually a high for PDSD, higher than almost any year in the past decade. And now that is everything from a solar permit that took one day to a new commercial building that we spent 9 months on. But 11,000 permits total. Of those, almost 1,200 new homes or 1,500 housing units were permitted. Of that, almost 1,200 were single family homes, most of which were residential model permits. So generally, those are in larger subdivisions. Of those 1,500 new housing units, 328 were multifamily. That's actually quite a bit lower than previous years. So I should say the 1,200 single family, that's pretty high, but kind of on par with previous years. I think we're at around 1,100, just under 1,100 the year before. So we're usually around 1,000 single family permits, or close to 1,000 over the past few years. The multifamily was a bit lower last year, though, and this is something that really was sort of a flag for us and is something that is a little concerning, especially given the need for housing in our community. Dan presented at our last meeting about the housing needs assessment that we completed in December, and that we found that we are underproducing housing and so have a deficit of almost, I think, over 6,000 units, and also have a need for about 12,000 new units over the next 5 years. So the fact that we had lower production, especially in multifamily, is a bit concerning last year. Of those, over 200 were affordable, which is great because we have a huge need for affordable housing. But what you see there is that we really didn't have very strong production of market rate multifamily, which is also a big need for the community. If you recall, the housing needs assessment really showed that we have a very high need at the kind of under 60% AMI, but also almost equal level of need at the 120% and above, which is market rate housing. So 1,500 new housing units, again, a bit lower than previous years. So what we're seeing is, I think there's a lot of factors obviously contributing to this, financial impacts. There's high interest rates, high cost of land and labor, but we do see that zoning and our land use policies do have an impact as well. And is contributing to the lower housing production last year. 120 new commercial buildings. And I want to provide a little bit more in terms of where we're seeing housing. So I talked a little bit about the housing trends already, roughly 80-20 SFR to multifamily. Again, that's a bit imbalanced from what we've seen in previous years, where in previous years we saw more of a 50-50 between multifamily and single family in Tucson. So you can get a sense here of how last year's housing production compares to previous years. We did see, like I said, an increase in single family units, mostly concentrated around the east side. The Houghton corridor is really a growth spot, and then along I-10. So I'll give you some, go through some maps just showing where we see that concentration. So this shows new residential, single family residential permits issued in 2024. And you can see La Estancia, one of the major drivers, 163 permits along I-10, Valencia Crossing, and the reserves at Valencia. Also, very active subdivision, 111 permits, Houghton Reserve. So looking at the Houghton corridor, 100 permits there, La Escalera, phase one, 55 permits, Casas del Cerrito, also near Houghton, 49 permits, Bella Tierra, phase two and three, 72 permits, the Vistas at Rincon Knoll, so a little further east, just on the border with Pima County, saw 67 permits. And then on the west side, we did see a bit at the West Bridge at Silver Bell with 40 issued permits. So you can see, and then Black Hawk, that's also kind of on the southern I-10 corridor, 134 issued permits. So you can see here that really these subdivisions are some of the major drivers of housing development across the city. Looking at multifamily, again, most of the multifamily that was permitted last year was affordable. So West Point 2, that's downtown on Ochoa, 85 affordable units. Desert Dove on the west side will have 64 affordable units. Newport Belvedere Terrace will on 22nd Street will have 72 affordable units. And then one of the market rate developments we did see was Placita Escondida. That those are condos, actually, along river, and that 48 units were permitted there last year. In terms of commercial development, that was pretty steady last year. Most of the larger scale new commercial that we see is concentrated in industrial, a lot of development in proximity to the airport where we're seeing spec warehouse development and spec industrial. We also did see retail, some large scale retail, as well as hotel and medical. So looking at commercial, some of the larger developments last year, I-10 industrial, near the airport, as well as Corona Commerce Center, also near the airport, some other office warehouse close to the airport, some office warehouse in an industrial zone near I-10. Medical office is being developed on Wilmot, close to St. Joseph's Hospital. A new hotel is under development just off of Craycroft near Grant. A new Tractor Supply is coming to the east side, and a new Bass Pro Shop coming to the Bridges in terms of large scale retail. So in terms of looking ahead to our future pipeline for this year, we do still see a lot of affordable housing in our pipeline, a number of projects, including the Sequoia, Lariat Village, Rincon Manor, and Sugar Hill on Stone. Those are all in review and will probably be permitted in the next few months. We also are seeing market rate housing largely around the university, so driven by proximity to the streetcar and campus, student housing, but also workforce housing in these projects. One is the Capstone at Speedway and Euclid. That's a site where several historic homes were recently relocated to allow this development. That'll be student and workforce housing. And then Speedway Campbell, just on the north side of Speedway, closer to Banner campus. There's plans there for another mixed-use project that will include 395 residential units, as well as ground floor retail. Yes.
Just curious, is that Speedway Camel, is that going to replace the Desert Shadows, the Palm Shadows?
Palm Shadows. Yes, that apartment. Is the Palm Shadows site.
Okay.
In terms of commercial industrial, some projects in the pipeline is the El Rio Rito Clinic, so a medical clinic, the Prince 10 planned area development, that's around Prince and I-10, some large scale commerce center that is planned there that could include industrial as well as retail and other uses. And then we continue to work with Arizona State Land Department on planning and entitlements for some of the land that they control in the city, including the Southlands area, south of I-10, large tracts of land that are in early entitlement stages. And then H2K, which is also near I-10 on the east side, has been entitled or has had the first phases of entitlement, and we're hoping to see some large-scale users there in the next few years. That's our development pipeline. In terms of other focus areas for planning and development services for 2025, we're very focused on Plan Tucson and really engaging our community in the formal review steps and then in the outreach leading up to a ballot election. The community corridors tool is a major focus, as you are all very well aware. And then following the community corridors, really one of the next things we're going to be focused on in terms of how we can allow more housing options in the city is the middle housing code update. This is driven by state legislation that was adopted last year that requires cities to adopt middle housing regulations. But we've really been looking at it as how can we take this legislation and look at what makes the most sense in Tucson based on our neighborhoods and our zoning. So we've been working with the Drochman Institute on research, and they've been doing some research into what are some options for how we implement this tool in Tucson that we'll be taking back to mayor and council in the next few months, and then that will be going through the code amendment process. We're also working on a building code update, adopting the 2024 codes. Those are international codes that get adopted locally every 6 years. That does not go through the Planning Commission because it does go through a different body. It goes through our joint code committee, which is a joint committee between the City of Tucson and Pima County. So we expect to take that to Mayor and Council in the next few months. We also launched an affordable housing fast track program earlier this year, which is an expedited plan review and permitting process for affordable housing development. So as I mentioned, that's a big part of our pipeline and really an important part of our housing needs for the city. So we've looked at how we can expedite that permitting process and have been piloted that last year. It was very successful. So we've launched that program just recently. We're continuing to focus on our customer experience and ways we can improve our processes for customers and streamline a lot of review processes and just online experience and permitting experience for customers. And then in terms of sustainability and resiliency, we're working on a number of code amendments. One is the Southwest Building Code, which is a regional effort to create a more climate-adapted building code that is tailored to the conditions of the Southwest. We're also working on low impact development standards that would create regulations for the use of stormwater and water resources on sites in Tucson. So those are our focus areas for 2025. And what we've seen last year, and this is something that we look at every year, is sort of what are the development trends that we should be looking at? What does this suggest in terms of places we may need to look at code changes or policy changes? So hope this is something we can share with the Planning Commission on an annual basis and integrate perhaps looking at tools like the Community Corridors tool and other tools developed with your input at, so we can look at what's working. Are there changes needed to those types of tools? Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation. I thought it was fascinating and exciting to see all the work that's been done. Good work.
I have a question. Can you make those slides available to us?
Yes.
And also, I tried not to take up the commission's time tonight with this question, but I still would like to understand why the Uniform Development Code cannot be reformed at some point. Doesn't have to be now, but you know, it fits in with all this stuff, and I just would really like to understand that at some point.
Commissioner McKenzie, the Unified Development Code can absolutely be reformed, and we hope we are doing that. We're doing it so far. How we've been making code amendments is in a more targeted, strategic approach of taking specific issues like how do we allow ADUs, how do we allow redevelopment on corridors, and addressing that.
You're
talking about an overhaul.
I'm talking about the. You know, that I keep seeing this, the underlying development code is the reason why it is not aligned with our policies and our goals. So, you know, as a root cause analyst person in my former life and present life, like, okay, if that's the problem, that's why aren't we reforming that rather than making workarounds?
I guess I think, Commissioner McKenzie, if I could, I think we would say some of these things are not necessarily just workarounds, but other options. So what we're trying to do is create more options in our code so that you could use the underlying zoning, perhaps. We don't want to take away that option, but add another option, which is the more transit-oriented, pedestrian-oriented option of the Community Corridors tool, for example.
Right, which I like all those goals. Mm-hmm. I love all those goals, but I still don't understand. I haven't gotten a good answer as to why that underlying UDC can't be reformed instead of trying to add things on, which is okay, but it's just for my own edification. Like, why is this?
We have gone through some overhauls. So in, I want to say 2010?
I believe it was 2013.
2013, yes. Moved from what used to be called the land use code, and now it's the Unified Development Code. So that was a major overhaul. So it absolutely can be done. Mm-hmm. It is something that, yeah, typically is only done every several decades in most cities because it is a huge undertaking.
I was just going to say, I think it took 2 years.
Yeah.
It did. So it takes some time.
I also wanted to mention that Prop 207 and the diminution of value and the implications of that has really hampered a lot of what can be done from the zoning code perspective. I see a hand up, Commissioner Lee.
Did you say Lane?
No, I did not. I apologize. I cannot read and have a terrible memory. I apologize in advance to everyone.
Are you speaking to me?
I am.
Okay, good. Thank you. Sorry, I couldn't be there last minute. I have two things. The first, I would very much support the concept of maybe at least studying or looking at the UDC to identify areas of it that are outdated or that need to be maybe rewritten or taken out completely, especially after these sorts of changes go in. So that could be at least a viable thing to look at before committing to a total overhaul. But I think there are a lot of redundancies and outdated parts of the UDC. So the second question, or rather the reason I raised my hand, do you, as we create these new focus areas and tools, does the city internally, staff-wise, have plans for what to do and how to handle the influx of new types of permits that are coming in? There's issues with turnaround times and review times and staffing issues that are affecting the way, the ability for these projects to be pushed through. And this seems that you're creating more opportunities and somehow internally you're going to drown yourselves if there's not also a parallel plan for how that goes.
Sure, Commissioner Lane. Yes, that's definitely something we're cognizant of, is the resource and staffing needs as our development patterns change in the city and we're seeing more infill potentially. So yeah, we have a number of resources and tools to address that staffing, but also technology options that we're exploring to expedite permitting and just streamline the permitting process, even perhaps automate more permit review steps like we've done with Solar App and some pieces of other review processes. So that's something we continue to look at. But yes, we absolutely would want to be resourced to handle and accommodate the development volume.
So just to follow up, it would be, I would like to see more and hear more from you all about your actual current turnaround times. And I mean, I experience the online permitting system frequently, and it's not become more efficient since the implementation of that tool, which I think was the ultimate goal. So, and I do small scale work, so I would imagine that at the larger scale, it's compounded. And I feel like bringing in more work is what we need to do, and the city must be prepared for it. And again, there's learning curve issues with the new online system that have really put a huge damper on a lot of things for people. So I just think we need to move forward with both of those things at once.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate that.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Lane. Any further discussion? Commissioner Lampo.
I guess I'll speak into the microphone so everyone online can hear me. I think this is something that I might have mentioned before as well, and a lot of the times I do kind of revert back to what does Albuquerque do, because similar code, it's a hybrid, you know, they had a Euclidean code and kind of went, oh, what can we tack on to this to make it a little bit more exciting? And that became the IDO, and it is very similar to the UDC, and they have a lot of the same issues. And one of the things that I think they do really well is every year they have two periods where they accept comments about potential revisions to the IDO. And they actually have two full-time planners on staff, and that's their job, is reviewing the IDO and making recommendations. Obviously, there's more to it than that, but that's the basic gist of it. And I think just having some sort of mechanism where we could look at the UDC, where are things looking a little bit sideways, where could we maybe have some better clarity, I think it would be huge. And just sort of top that off, I go to Pima County Real Estate Research Council and SABA and all those events, and at every event that has dealt with development in the city of Tucson that I've gone to, invariably someone asks the question, why is development so slow here? And the response invariably is the UDC. It's hard to get entitlements. The zoning is tough.
Yeah, Commissioner Lampo, thank you. So a couple things related to that. One is, yeah, about a year and a half ago, we actually did something similar to that, to where we went through and we had an online comment forum. We held sessions to actually get public feedback. And then we did internal sessions as well with our staff to really understand what are the real pain points. And we did an amendment of, I think it was like 8 to 10 code amendments of the things that we heard that were the biggest kind of, I guess, low-hanging fruit barrier, like the stuff that was easy to address but causing a lot of problems, essentially. And yes, we intend to do other cleanups similar to that and get the feedback from the public. And then the other thing is just that we have been actually meeting with Albuquerque kind of quarterly to talk about all kinds of different things. I think it started off originally as talking about ADUs, but we've talked about corridor planning, and this is kind of another one of those things maybe we can bring up with them and discuss with them. It's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have a contact I can give you. He is a self-described zoning aficionado.
Oh, hey.
It might help.
I like it.
All right. Any more questions online? Comments? All right. Well, thank you, staff, for your presentation. Go ahead and call for the next item. Item number 4, Plan Tucson 2025, a study session. I see Commissioner Willett has her hand up now. Jump in right before. All right. Maybe not. Cesar, take it away.
Great. Oh. Got two up now?
Okay, we got multiple hands up now. Commissioner Abreeza.
Good, thank you. So is there, I find all this interesting with the UDC code, and I can understand as reading it as not an expert, but finding it a little bit cumbersome. Is, as far as, I'm sure there are people on staff as these changes go through. Is there a constant or like training for staff to help implement these codes or possibly help them out if there's problems? Are they encouraged to ask questions?
Yeah, Commissioner Zagier, I guess every time we pass any sort of change or kind of code amendment, we hold internal kind of educational sessions. And then additionally, we will create kind of, I don't know if they're like cheat sheets or whatever, but kind of, you know, guides essentially on how to review for those new changes. Implementation is a really important part of any sort of code change related to that.
Thank you.
All right, I think I'm up. Well, good evening, commissioners. Thank you so much for your time this evening. I'm really excited to present to you today about our general plan update for Plan Tucson 2025. So for today's presentation, I'll focus a bit on what the engagement process was like to get us to where we are, today. I'll go through the five chapters of the draft preliminary draft plan and what we've heard from our engagement period that took place throughout the month of January. Then I'll wrap up with some of the next steps we have for public hearings, which is the next step in our process, as well as some forward-looking dates for council and for eventual vote in November of this year. So if, in case you weren't aware already, the general plan is a state-required long-range planning document, and it's intended to cover a wide range of issues, everything from traffic circulation to land use design, water conservation, public safety, and if you have an airport, air traffic control. So we have that included in our plan as well. In addition to that, the plan also goes over a number of other issues, including cost development, open space, and the general cost of development as well. And for this process, the last general plan was passed in 2013. In December of 2022, Mayor and Council directed our department to begin the process to update the plan to make sure it remains relevant for our community and that it reflects what our community wants to see moving forward in the next 10 years and has a 20-year scope to it. We're now a year and a half into this process of a three-year process and stage three of a four-phase effort. And after a year and a half of public engagement, we just kind of want to summarize real quick some of the great work that our team has done to communicate with the public and bring this first draft of our plan to fruition. So from January 23 to June, we spoke to around 2,000 individual residents. We had 950 online surveys and collected some 13,000 total comments. These were done both in in-person events, by taking clipboards out to parks and into shopping centers. And we really just had a few simple questions of what do you care most about Tucson? What do you want to see change? What do you want to see preserved? And what challenges or opportunities do you see? And that gave us the foundation for a set of themes that we had as far as what were the key concerns for the community. And we worked those into five working groups that worked on things like climate action, water, transportation, mobility, economic vitality, community resources, and housing, land use, and neighborhood design. And in those five working groups, we spent June of 23 all the way through August of last year in working group sessions. So instead of single touches with a broad range of the community, we really dove in deep with the with around 677 community member volunteers to think through what should the goals, policies, and actions in the plan be. And we worked with them to make sure that we had kind of a base level for what those looked like. And then we held six community forums that were held during weekend and evening hours to make sure we can get touch a broad stretch of the community, make sure that we were still right on track. And so at the end of the day, we had some 750 comments that resulted out of this stage, telling us what the goals, policies, and general organization of the plan should look like. So in August of last year, we began the process of really formulating those into what would be a kind of a preliminary draft, so just what the goals and policies were. And we had 20 goals and 328 plus policies to review. We held office hours in the summer of last year to show people what they were, what they looked like, get a sense of what was to come. And the feedback we got was that it was good. It was the, it was in the direction that we wanted to see the community head towards, but it was overwhelming. A lot of additional information, hard to get a grasp on all the total goals. So we went to the back and condensed and revised to make sure that we could have a more succinct set of goals and policies. And then in December of this of last year, we published the first draft of the plan. And so after we released the plan, it was real close to the holiday. So we really just held an open house to talk about that the plan was out there, told them where to find it on our webpage, and talked about opportunities we would have in the new year to engage with people in a more, you know, concrete way and have more time to, for them to think through and process and look over this 200 plus page document so that they'd have time to review it and discuss with us about it. We held in the month of January, four in-person sessions, two virtual. We met with 12 boards and commissions going over the specific goals that were relevant to them. Met with three neighborhood associations who invited us to speak, three different interest groups, two developer stakeholder meetings, and in total collected something of 74 individual surveys and three meeting in a box. So we held a opportunity for people to host their own meeting, and it gave us the same surveys materials that we would hope that we would get out of our in-person or virtual sessions. So they were able to host those, and we got three of those back. And so at the end of the day, it was around 827 comments collected as of January 31st, covering the entire range of the document. The bulk of comments really in chapter 3, which is where goals and policies are centered. And so I showed y'all this the last time we were able to speak to each other in December. This is the 5 chapters of the general plan, and I'll go through them again just to give a brief review of what we discussed last time. And then after each section discussed, I'll tell you what we've heard from the public so far after our first month of public engagement. So the introductory chapter lays just grounding on what a general plan is, what it's supposed to do, how the city uses it, and how it interacts with all the other planning documents that the city has, with functional plans that deal with mobility, with housing, with climate action. And so we wanted to make sure that all of those were integrated within the general plan and discussed how they work together. And then it also includes the guiding principles that formulated our process for public engagement and got us up to the point where we were ready to draft. And so a summary of our engagement is included in the first chapter as well. The feedback we got in this chapter was largely that it made sense, that it was clear. People didn't really have a lot of questions about it. And the overall feedback here was, yeah, we think that this tells the story it needs to. Chapter 2 really is if you have friends coming to Tucson or you think you know someone who would be interested in investing and coming into our community, it is a snapshot of the city. So it goes through a brief timeline of our history and then includes a set of current conditions of our current housing, transportation, safety, cultural assets, our water usage, energy, and land. And in this chapter, we'd heard from folks that it really does a good job of telling all the different aspects that are important to celebrate in the community, but it didn't do a good job of talking about the challenges the city faces. So we are going back to include additional information about our unhoused population and some of the challenges we've had as that has grown in the city of Tucson over the last 10 years, road conditions being a persistent talking point with the public, poverty rate and crime, and just make sure that we note that these are concerns in the community and that we are bringing them as current conditions to really just be at the forefront, that we're not trying to hide that information. We heard from our dark skies community that they wanted to see more talk about light pollution and how our dark skies ordinance and our outdoor lighting code work in our current conditions is a unique factor in our city. In the history section, people said that we didn't really talk enough about the U of A. It's an important part of our community, and we want to make sure that that's highlighted as its own section. There is also in Chapter 2 a section on neighborhoods as a key aspect of how the community interacts with the city and is an important part of all of our planning processes. But we heard from a couple of residents that we want to make sure to not just highlight neighborhood associations, but neighborhood organizations or other community groups that also interact with the city at that base level and how they are important in the planning process as well. So we will go back and think and add conversation about that as well. Chapter 3 really is where the bulk of the plan is. It is our goals and policies. And in that, we have 14 goals that cover the range of issues that we heard from the community are most important to address. Covering a wide stretch of issues, including governance, equity, climate resilience, wellness, housing, education, water, historic, cultural, economy, transportation, and land use. And I'll go through again each of those just to get a summary of what each of those goals has to offer. And so the first goal, foster inclusive, transparent, efficient, and equitable city governance. For this goal, we worked with each of the ward offices, the Office of Equity, and the City Clerk's Office to make sure that the information we put is in alignment with the work that they're doing and that they want to see moving forward over the next 10 years, as well as address the community's concerns for where we want to see that work heading. Policies in this goal focus on community engagement and participation, how we can have more collaborative and integrated planning processes, how we can be transparent and accessible for all city information, how infrastructure and resource management occurs, how we can make sure to respect our cultural assets and what the process is for doing that, and making sure that all of the city documents, resources, and processes are accessible to everyone. Talking to folks about this goal, we heard that they want to make sure that we do think critically about how we can increase awareness of government programs. So even though we talk in detail about ways that they are accessible, policies we can do to make sure that we're reducing barriers to access for people to be involved in the city, that we promote ways of being aware of those as well. We heard from folks different suggestions for policy changes. So these are just from direct quotes of some of the suggestions we heard. Goal 2 is support the development of an equitable community. So worked with our equity office, as well as housing, community development, Department of Transportation Mobility, community safety, health, wellness, and the community health, safety, wellness program. We worked with more, we worked with departments across this, across the organization for all of our goals, but these are the ones that we focus most with. And policies here focus on equity and information, awareness and education, workforce development, sustainability, healthcare and wellness, and then community-centered development. In this goal, we heard from the public that, you know, we wanted to make sure that we're highlighting some of our ADA gaps and where we can make sure that we are being inclusive of residents who residents with disabilities, thinking about environmental impacts and how that impacts equity. So we heard again that lighting impacts the kind of services that people can get and the safety access that they have in different communities. There's a disparity, so we'll make sure to highlight that. And then just some of the language people want to see in policies, we'll work to make sure that we're being intentional about how we're phrasing the different policies. Goal 3, be a leader in carbon reduction and resiliency to extreme heat and climate impacts. We worked with the city manager's chief resiliency officer. We worked with the Environmental General Services Department, transportation mobility, and our own to think about policies that deal with energy efficiency, renewable energy transitioning, urban heat mitigation, water resource management, environmental conservation, and sustainable transportation. Are all important to making sure that we can be a more resilient, climate resilient community. And the feedback we got there included, just want to make sure that we, again, think intentionally about the language that we're using. So there were a lot of comments on whether we're using the term carbon neutrality or zero carbon, zero emissions versus climate neutrality. And so we want to be consistent with those terminologies across the board and where we use them. There's also a glossary at the as an appendix in the plan. So we'll make sure that each of the definitions there are clear. And if whatever language we use has a reference point. Want to make sure that there was a discussion about how the city operates with our utility companies and infrastructure development, where it was another large talking point. Goal 4, improve health, wellness, safety across the community. So we worked with CASHU, with the Housing Community Development Department, Tucson Fire and Police, as well as Parks and Rec, to think about a holistic approach to health and wellness that includes how transportation impacts park space, impacts our workforce development, impacts food security, nutrition, and community health access, and that all these things can work collaboratively together. We heard from folks that they want to make sure that we are emphasizing cooling centers. We do mention it, but we want to talk about more in depth of how they've operated in the city and what we can do to increase them. We heard about a desire to see a coordinated and comprehensive approach to care coordination and our Office of Violence and Prevention and Intervention. They get a shout out. We want to make sure that they are more in detail discussed. Some discussion on some of the policies of what some suggested changes could look like. And then just also making sure that we're talking about how to make sure we're improving access to our facilities and neighborhood parks. Goal 5, expand affordable and accessible housing options. We worked with HCD, with the Office of Equity, Community Safety, Health, and Wellness, and with the Planning Department to think through policies that deal with affordable and diverse housing options, housing accessibility and stability, home ownership, working on anti-displacement and neighborhood preservation. Comments here were around how we can make sure that we're including more data about our housing, the status of housing in Tucson. So things like comparing cost of housing in similar cities across the state, a desire to see more language on loosening restrictions, and also encouraging more language on mobile homes and tiny homes were comments that we received for policy suggestion. Goal 6, expand access to quality education for all ages and abilities. We work with Parks and Rec, especially as they're the ones who are doing kind of daycare and early learning programming. But we have, in this goal, policies talk towards lifelong learning access, towards workforce development, towards cultural and historic education, and special education outreach. We heard that, you know, we want to make sure that we're talking again about the data for that's in our current conditions on education. So think of the challenges for graduation rates or for teacher wages or our scores in STEM. We wanted to see, there was comments asking for showing how we have an intersection between education and crime reduction. So that's speaking to kind of goal 4's collaborative approach. We want to see that integrated in this goal as well. And that policies specifically talk about, you know, education access for residents with disabilities. Goal 7 is promote responsible management of use of water. Tucson, we worked with Tucson Water as well as the Planning Department to talk through policies that deal with water conservation and efficiency, with community equity, and water quality protection and infrastructure development. This actually had the least comments of any of the goals that we had. So there were a couple of suggestions for, you know, this was just one suggestion for a policy change, but ultimately people gave us a pretty positive response of how this goal is framed and organized. I can get this to work. There it goes. Goal 8 is promote a clean community and reduce the harmful effects of pollutants in our environment. So we worked with EGSD, with the city manager's office, and with planning development services to talk through policies for pollution reduction and mitigation, for waste management, for environmental remediation, community engagement, and land use and health considerations. Some of the highlights here were, you know, we had questions about what policies we can do to impact flight operations, whether it be for the Tucson International Airport or for Davis-Monthan. There was questions or requests for language strengthening the use of zero waste and waste reduction policy and incorporating traditional ecological knowledge from our native communities. A desire for expanding description on how stormwater management education is making sure that people know about that. And then we heard of the importance for having additional language on outdoor lighting and how it impacts our unique environment here. Goal 9 is preserve, protect, and enhance natural ecosystems and open spaces. We worked with, again, a number of departments who deal with our open space and parklands. And then policies focused on ecosystem preservation and enhancement, urban green space and vegetation, environmental resilience and adaptation, biodiversity and wildlife protection, and then partnering with education to make sure that the public knows about all these resources. Comments we received were, you know, make sure that we're changing the definition for wildlife corridors. Again, just making sure that we're being intentional with how the wording appears in our narrative and in our policies. Some suggestions on policy changes. Goal 10 was preserve and protect the city's unique historic and archaeological resources. We worked with the city manager's office as well as planning and development services to talk through aspects of cultural heritage preservation, adaptive reuse, cultural identity celebration, community engagement on our historic resources, and development conservation integration, how we can make sure that we're putting forth policies in our development process. So again, there was questions about rules that govern how we can update our historic preservation policies to make sure that they're incorporating things like the need for updating to make sure that they're sensitive to the addition of solar panels or ADA accommodations or how infill will be impact for our historic centers and historic preservation zones. There were some additional language suggestions that we saw. And ultimately, people gave us pretty specific detailed word choice on like our various policies, but people like the narrative structure in this one. For goal 11, foster and promote Tucson's art, culture, and heritage, we work with city manager's office and the folks with Somos Uno to make sure that we discuss policies that talk about cultural expression and creativity, about tourism and how it impacts local commerce, about community engagement and inclusivity, and then about heritage preservation and promotion. Yeah, policies for this one, suggestions we saw mostly were, again, tooled towards specific policies, and then also just a few questions about the narrative that we put out, like asking for additional information because there was things that people didn't know about, which we thought was a good sign that we're really giving out new information to educate the community. For goal 12, strengthen the local and regional economy to provide opportunities for all Tucsonans to thrive, we worked with the Office of Economic Initiatives. This policy language here focuses on workforce development, on business support and economic growth, infrastructure and strategic investment, diversifying our economy, and then our regional international partnering and positioning. Again, not as many comments on this one, but the ones we got were on how we're tying land use to job creation, suggestions for how we can tie environmental policy back to our economy, and again, want to see more emphasis on bringing in new employers to Tucson. There's, as you know, the city of Tucson's largest employers are public sector, so there was a number of comments saying, like, what can we do to promote new jobs coming into the city? Goal 13 is expand access to high-quality transportation choices, enhance safety, and improve the conditions of other infrastructure. We worked with DTM and Planning and Development Services. Policies focus on multimodal access, environmental sustainability, access, regional connectivity, and integrated urban planning. a number of comments on, you know, how we can make sure to better accommodate ADA and terminology for residents with disabilities, increasing safety and security. There were a number of comments just concerned about how safe and accessible our current transit system is, and what we can do to improve that over the next 10 years. And then questions about like access to, like, so hours of operation and where transit stops are located. Goal 14 is enhanced comprehensive and inclusive land use planning for a well-designed, vibrant community. So we work with a lot beyond just these. We really did touch a lot of different departments within the organization to make sure that we were integrating and inclusive of how land use would be designed. And so we worked with Parks Rec, Housing Community Development, Planning Development Service, and Transportation Mobility. Policies focused on holistic development, on inclusive governance, on sustainability and adaptive design, equitable land use and housing, and then strategic infrastructure and resource management. And so what we heard is a lot of language requests for, you know, for policies to be clarified or for additional language, things like making sure that we're thinking through annexation, how land use interacts with neighborhoods, specifically neighborhood planning, and then suggestions for how we can change our zoning code or change policies related to zoning. Chapter 4 is the goal that had the second largest amount of comments and focuses on where our long-range growth is. So it includes ideas or projections for our land use patterns and how we're planning on expanding the city, as we expect some 24,000 people to move into the city according to the Pima Association of Governance. We also in this chapter include our future growth scenario map, which kind of positions where we're guiding different types of development across the city for the next 10 years. And there's that growth map. So this is the second draft of the map that appears in our preliminary draft. And again, each of those colors represents a building block, which have their own set of development guidelines and set of characters for the types of uses and type of characteristics we hope to see developed and that we're hoping to guide across different areas of the city. And then the building blocks themselves, as I said, have their own unique set of their own unique mixes of land use and housing characteristics, the types of transportation that is most often seen in each of them, and then general characteristics about each. All of these have a blend of residential and commercial uses, so there is mixed use across the city, it's just to what scale. And then we also include definitions for special planning areas, things like the Southland or the Houghton Corridor, which are largely state-owned land, but within city limits. So they have their own processes for development that we encourage working through planned area development or PAC. And the feedback we got, largely people understood, you know, what was being said, but it was a very dense information. This is a more technical chapter, so folks asked us to clarify terminology or try and rephrase or reformat to make it easier to digest. People were very supportive on the building blocks. For the feedback we got on there, people felt that they did reflect the kind of characters that they'd like to see across the city. And then on the map itself, we had about 48 individual responses to our survey, and the majority said that, yes, it was a reflection of what we want to see moving forward. 48% said did not. But many of the no votes commented that what they wanted to see was, in fact, a greater intensity or a greater mix of uses in different parts of the city. For development guidelines, many of the comments we received were high level. So it was the one section of the plan where we really were asking for more specific detail, and people kind of went high level on here. And so a lot of the comments are actually addressed within the existing policies that we have for land use and transportation. Chapter 5, implementation, really, we tried to make sure to integrate all of the existing functional plans that the city has and the specific neighborhood and area plans as well as the method for implementation. Because the goals that we have are such broad and high level, it is hard to get metrics or guidelines that can show us where progress occurs over the next 10 years. And that was the overwhelming number one comment we saw with people asking, giving us comments on Chapter 5, was what metrics can we provide? What can we do to show that things are moving forward with the goals? And Our answer to that still is that we feel the best way to see progress is through the implementation of the functional plan. So what we'll do is we'll try to work in clear examples of how the functional plan policies and objectives are laid out so that they can show that connection for how those plans will help to implement the broader goals of the general plan. And we're also working to eventually have an online version of the plan. So that'll be something that we have after we have a final draft of the plan approved, that we can create an online version of the plan that will have better links, better connections, and hopefully a page where we can have a lot of different metrics and dashboards that the various departments have, all located in one place. That way people can kind of track progress in an easier, more accessible way. But for the printed version of the plan, we're still thinking about how we can better accommodate that request to see greater implementation or greater implementation metrics and such. So next steps, we've closed our engagement period. So it ended January 31st. And so now we're working furiously to add in and incorporate all of the notes that we've got into a revised draft. And we'll hopefully present it to y'all March 12th and March 19th for a set of public hearings. So that'll be a revised draft that y'all have access to. We want to get that to you a week prior. So, and we'll give you some notes on the highlighted changes that occur. And then after public hearings, we hope to go take it to mayor and council with a final draft in late April, early May. After which we'll be able to get it adopted in an ordinance place to put it on the ballot for November of this year. And that's kind of where we're at. That's our timeline moving forward and what we've had. It's been a real honor to be able to work on this process so far, and I'm excited to take any questions y'all have.
Thank you so much for that presentation. Go ahead and open it up to the commission for questions. Before I do, just wanted to let the staff and commission know that Commissioner Wellett has recused herself. She had some technical difficulties earlier before the presentation, but she went ahead and did recuse herself for conflict of interest on this case. That said, out to the commission. Commissioner Small.
Great presentation. There's a lot to absorb in there. And I'm just curious, I don't think I have my head wrapped around yet how you take such an ambitious and optimistic wish list and turn it into something that the public can vote on. I don't understand what the nut is essentially that gets voted on by the public to provide a mandate for the city to implement a lot of these, again, optimistic goals.
I would say that the nature of a general plan is to be a vision document. It provides us direction for the way we want to move as a city. It's much easier to look at the specific policies and the development guidelines as the parts that can be implemented or the parts that will be used in implementation over the next 10 years. They are intended to be flexible in the sense that if there are changes in the desires of the community, we still have a general direction that we're heading. But I understand that, you know, it's a concern we've heard a lot. It's just like, how can we take something so heady and bring it into something that's realistic? We wanted to try and illustrate that in the implementation chapter. We include a list of near, mid, and long-term projects. So those are concrete examples of projects that will take place in a 3-year period, in a 5-year period, in the 10-year period, that people can see and track and see like that's moving us towards these specific goals. So that was one thing we tried to do to make it a bit more concrete. And I do feel just the nature of the plan is to be more vision, more guidance than it is to be specific in nature to that. But yeah, no, I understand that concern.
Yeah, it's a lot to go from here to yeah. here and put it in front of the public and say, you know, be informed about what you're actually voting for here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's a lot of everything really that is optimistically achievable, I think.
Agreed. I think that, you know, what we will ask people is, you know, what kind of city do we want to be, and does this reflect the values of that moving forward? And I would say what's different about this plan from the 2013 iteration is it has a higher focus on equity. When we think of sustainability in the 2013 plan, now it has been more honed into thinking about resilience and open space. So we have more detail about the kind of sustainability we want to see. Focusing goals on housing and transportation and land use also have kind of a key bent to them of like where we want to be headed.
I think we have Commissioner Zegear and then Commissioner McKenzie.
Hi. I'm first I want to thank you all, PDSD, for supplying me with a text only version. It was I could actually download it. The one that I found online, it restricted me from downloading it. I have a question. I think it was on around, I think it's around page 13. So there are some AI tools that were used, and it said like ChatGPT or Claude, which I'm unfamiliar with. So my question is, so which AI tool was used? How much or what was it involved as far as producing the Plan Tucson? And that's pretty much my question. Is like, is there a specific company or a program that was used, AI tool that was used, and how much input and where was that input in Plan Tucson?
It's a great question, Commissioner. So I'd say Claude AI was the primary tool that we used as far as AI functions. ChatGPT and Adobe's AI assistant were both used as well, but in much lesser extent. The way we used them often was prompting questions to summarize scoops of feedback. So for after every engagement opportunity we had, like we asked to summarize what was the general vibe or feedback that received on this in this category or in this area. We also asked for assistance to frame or to help us if we had, you know, writer's block, to help us clear up any paragraphs or language or ways to prompt to say, like, how can we best express this idea or best explain this policy. But everything had human review. There was at no point language that went from AI into the plan. There were prompts that were given us to show us a general trend or an idea, and then we used that to craft what the language that ended up in the general plan. We thought it was really important to note that it was used as a tool, so that's why we have that section in there.
Well, that explains a lot of the language that I was going through, and some corrections that I would add that I think that I would be better if I just write something and send it to you, because it's about 3 or 4 pages long. So so that explains a lot. So the questions were the questions that were proposed to people that were in the engagement survey. Were these written by an AI program and that AI program was given parameters by the city of Tucson?
If I'm understanding, the question is how we used AI to write questions from our engagement, or how to summarize engagement. Is that correct?
Yes.
Cool. So I would say that we used it to tell us general, to find keywords or key themes. And then from that, reviewed the language directly to see if that was accurate. And then used that to form our base for how we were writing about what we heard from the public. So again, it helped us to organize and think through a few hundred comments at a time, and then to review it with human eyes to make sure that we were actually, it was accurate. But it was a way for us to kind of get a first pass to think through what was being, you know, what we had heard from the public and organize it more quickly.
Commissioner Zagir, I also want to just point out that, the AI language was not utilized to come up with the questions or draft the questions or anything of that sort. Mm-hmm. It was really only utilized, as Cesar was talking about, for when we were trying to summarize things, to really get a general feel of really what the feedback that we were receiving was.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner McKenzie.
Thank you. Yeah, lots of kudos for the work that, and particularly the people that interface with the public on things like this. It's a real challenge, and I admire people that can do this and do this well. I wanted to commend the emphasis on the metrics, which I think is very important for people to have some faith in the you know, in the plan and its implementation. And just to further extend that and say, well, maybe we could have, you know, and maybe these belong in the functional plans, but you know, a range, you know, some a realistically achievable goal on one end, and you know, a stretch goal on the other end, you know, for some of the more important you know, policies like the first five or the first three that you had in that summary. I'd also like to see, since a, you know, it is a vision document, and the functional plans, I think, are the plans, right? That's the way I've sort of figured out how to look at this thing after, you know, following this. I'd like to see the city, like, just develop a couple of calling cards, you know, and say, okay, Tucson, when you think of Tucson, what do you think of? You know, you think of, you know, the best city in America to bicycle in. That's how I think of it, you know, pretty close. Or, you know, the city that, you know, went from, you know, 60% public sector dependence to 40%, you know, just different types of, but, you know, calling cards, three or four calling cards that, you know, the public can then glom onto and say, hey, this is what we're working towards, is to be the city that is identified with this. Okay. And then, a section maybe on, big bold ideas, I thought would be helpful. I mean, you know, the whole, you know, a vision without a plan is a nightmare. A plan without a vision is a dream, or what, vice versa, whatever. But still, you know, big bold ideas are always good, and I think they you know, they kind of jazz up the public. You know, so those are my comments. Thank you.
Agreed. And personally, what I associate Tucson with the place to get Sonoran dogs. I said, personally, I associate Tucson as the place to get Sonoran dogs.
Any Mexican food.
Commissioner Lane.
Hi. It's a huge amount of work to get 20 goals written and agreed upon, and to take that amount of, like, public input. I've seen you guys out at all sorts of Tucson events to try and gather all this information. And so I think it's really impressive. And I'm always the person who's like, okay, how do we implement, or how do we utilize this tool as, like, in the city? And looking at the goals, they all affect multiple departments within city government, I would say, and county government, or possibly so. And I would imagine that buried within that document are evaluation criteria. And you mentioned maybe that there would be an online object or an online presence for this thing. So could you, like, talk a little bit about how you envision this being used? How can we hold different government departments accountable to the goals set within the document? Like how do we use it efficiently now, or once it's adopted, rather?
I love that question. So we tried to structure the goals in chapter three as having the goal language, a narrative about why it's important, and then an implementation spotlight that highlights the specific plan, the functional plans that'll help to guide how that goal will be implemented and accomplished. The policies, what we hope for is that folks will be able to read those, and as plans are updated or revised or introduced, those are the policies that they can say it meets those objectives, does not meet those objectives, and be able to advocate for and against. And then the development guidelines for specific entitlement changes or rezonings, that they'd be able to go to those to say that these characteristics are or are not being followed. I think that the general plan, there'll be a good opportunity to do some education for folks on, like, how best to use it. I hope it doesn't get shelved. I hope it's a living document that continues to be used. And then the online version, as we said, will be something that's a little more easy accessible, that people can click to a specific policy or to a specific goal, and it'll give them more streamline of, like, of which departments are impacted by that, or which functional plans are associated with that goal.
I mean, can I ask, just to follow up, like, will there be a potential for like a Plan Tucson czar or something that shows up in like how do you again like when big decisions across departments are being made, how do you like I feel like there should be a per like are you dedicated is there a person or a staff person dedicated to like being available to other departments to ask questions to make sure that this plan is being represented at all levels?
Yeah, so Commissioner Lane, just want to talk a little bit about kind of what we've done in the past and what we could potentially do moving forward. I mean, as of now, we do not have a Plan Tucson Czar, set up necessarily, but it is something that we definitely do want to kind of monitor and check its progress over time. Things that we've done in the past, we've had progress reports that we've done kind of every 2 or 3 years. Where we reach out to other departments, we get an understanding of really projects that are supportive of Plan Tucson and Plan Tucson goals and policies. And that's one way that we can do this. Another is really having a website or a dashboard that really looks at different types of projects that do support Plan Tucson and then looking at that progress over time. It's something that we will be working, in an interdisciplinary, interdepartmental way, because this plan really does represent the entire city. But those are some of the ways that, in order to kind of track and monitor, see how we've been as far as implementation of this.
I might suggest, like, you guys sometimes in the language of the zoning code, at least, offer incentives to developers to pick up pieces of that code. So potentially there's a way to incentivize departments within the city also to adhere to this plan. And I really think it's a nice tool to have to track when people meet these goals. Like we set the, you guys put so, I just worry that you put so much time, effort, energy, money, all the thing, resource into creating it. It would be awful if it just turned into a pretty website or a, I mean, maybe it's okay if it turns into a marketing material, but incentivize people to actually use it and measure their success with it.
No, thank you, Commissioner Lane. Appreciate that. And one other thing that I was just kind of thinking that we've also been doing and have done that we've implemented with the last one is really having these Plan Tucson policies for every mayor and council item to make sure that we're, to tracking that, but also that we are following that general plan. So that's another way that we can do that and applying that, citywide again, instead of just planning and development services.
Thank you.
Commissioner Lampo.
So, first of all, great job. This is it really is a beautiful document, and I took part in the working groups and I always forget. Now I'll talk really quietly into the mic. Okay, so I'll repeat myself. Great document. It really is. I know Corley Group worked on it. They did a great job. You guys did a great job with all the public outreach. It's a beautiful document. I was in a few of the working groups. They were great. I have a few questions and a few comments. One is really specific, so we'll get through that one first, but what was the thought behind the major amendments being 65 or more acres? I know the state's kind of silent on what triggers a major amendment in a general plan, and they're all over the place. City of Phoenix is 10 acres and up. Some of the smaller municipalities can be like 200 acres. So what was the thought process there? 65, what was that? What defined that?
Yeah, honestly, it was the current amendment threshold in the 2013 plan. So we had asked our entitlements team, is that effective? Is this working? And they said yes.
Okay.
So that was it.
Interesting. Well, that works. That actually brings up another good point because this is a full rewrite, essentially, right?
Update process, but it's been a pretty large revision.
So I think it would be good if we could see just a breakdown of some of the major changes that we're seeing between 2013 and this edition. It just makes sense to be able to see those. The other thing is that, you know, there's a very long list of goals. I don't see any actual action items, but breaking down that goals list into a matrix, that would be a lot easier if it were an appendix, something that would be easily found and you could easily point to it. That's a suggestion. I noticed that you're missing the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan under the functional plan section. That would be a good one to add into that. I think that was just approved a couple years ago. And those are updated every 5 years. So, and then I'm just curious. So Tonawanda, Pascagoula, San Javier, were they consulted? Were they included in any of the working groups? Because I noticed that there are some pretty intense land uses landing right next to tribal land. So just thought I'd see if they took part in that, if they knew that was happening.
We reached out to the nations, let them know. Well, we sent them copies of the draft, and throughout the phase two where we were in working groups, we invited participants to come join us. We haven't gotten great response, I guess. Like we've not had many people answer us back, but we continue to send out draft, to send out notice, to send please let us know if this is good.
Okay. I know San Javier District is actually in the process of updating. I think it actually might be their first, so writing their first comprehensive plan. So it might be a good chance for some cross collaboration there. Probably a little bit too late in the process, but probably wouldn't hurt. But just, I guess, building on that. So there are a lot of goals. There are a lot of policies. But are we going to be seeing a list of action items? So, you know, support a pathway to home ownership with programs and resources that remove financial and logistic obstacles. Like, okay, so how do we achieve that? Is there funding that we can go after? Is there an actual action item that we can tack onto that to bring those goals to life?
I think the intent is that we look towards the functional plans for the action items, but that the policies and goals in the general plan help guide the revisions for any of those documents. So that if there are whatever actions that they pursue, that they can look to Plan Tucson to say that it is supported to move in this direction. And that for any grants, that they can look at the general plan and say it is within the city's general document that they look forward to these things.
That actually brings up a good point. So federal funding might be going out the window. I don't know. Sometimes comprehensive plans, sometimes general plans, some of the ones I've written, we like to include a section, an appendix that points out all of the funding opportunities that are out there to make some of these goals a reality. Mm-hmm. And so with the potential that now federal funding might be getting turned off, it might be something to look at. I know the state, it's really tough to find funding sources through the state of Arizona, but might be a good thing to add as an appendix as well, just potential funding opportunities that are out there.
Yeah, within Chapter 5, we do have a listing of the examples of different funding sources for the city. So everything from our bonds to general fund to federal grant funds and examples of different projects that are using those. But you're right, we can look to see if we can do an appendix of more specific, more full, more fledged out listing.
Yeah, that would be great. Other than that, really, I can't say enough. This is a great document, read through the whole thing, all 300 pages.
Thank you for that.
You know, start to finish. No, I didn't actually do that. But I hit the highlights, and it really is. It's a good-looking document. It looks very functional. I don't think this is going to be a shelf plan, so good job.
Commissioner Small? Just a presentation comment. I was unable to follow the graphic your presentation, and I wasn't able to match it with anything that I was able to see on ours. And so, and because that screen is tipped away, and a lot of the text is kind of small, couldn't see anything up there, to be honest with you, other than some of the really pretty pictures. And I wanted to. I wanted to be able to follow better. So correct me if I'm not able to find what you were showing on the screen there, because I wanted to be in sync there.
Yeah, Commissioner Small, normally we don't post them prior to the meeting, but maybe understanding kind of the logistical issues that we have here, we should be posting a PDF of those so you could actually review them.
That would be helpful. I would really have enjoyed following along instead of struggling to figure out what what was actually on the screen up there. Thank you. All right. Well, I have a comment, and I guess I'd like to state that, speaking as a private citizen, not under, like, I'm biased by my work, but I work for Tucson Electric Power, and so a little bit biased, but this is my personal opinion, and I see that climate and renewable energy and heat and resiliency, carbon sequestration, these are all really important goals. And the document talks about collaboration and working with the community. I see very little discussion of the city's sole power source and major renewable provider. And I'm just wondering if the city has looked into, you know, what a better collaboration with TEP would look like to really incentivize a lot of these things that are in these goals.
That's valid feedback. And it's actually one of the comments that we've received for goal three, I think specifically, was that we had a couple of comments saying, like, what is the conversation with the utility? What is TEP's language? And so that's something we can look to add in more discussion on for our narrative. But if you have suggestions on policy or like any direction that we should head as far as the city's relationship with TEP or with utilities brought more broadly, you know, our comment period is closed, but you know, we're not going to turn down people's recommendations to us.
Well, it looks like we have no further discussion.
I don't know if this is a typo. In the phase two summary, I see working group sessions, 18 of them, 6 community forums, 9 pop-up events, 655 unique attendance, 2 events. I see the map. It doesn't look like they're actually, I'm guessing this has to be a typo. Was there no event that occurred in Ward 4? It seems like that would be a good place to have one. I know they're probably limited opportunities or public spaces there, but if we're anticipating a lot of growth out there, probably would have been good to get their input.
If we're looking at the map on page 17, for where we were listening, I think there's at least
it's
two
on
events.
Page 7 of the document, okay. Phase 2 summary that was attached to our agenda.
Oh, okay.
So I see events happening in what looks like every ward except for possibly Ward 5, but there might be one on the north end, but I'm not seeing anything in Ward 4.
Okay, I think you're looking at the engagement map on for phase two. So what's not listed here is our office hours, where we held each ward office hosted for us an office hour during the summer of this year. For when we had our first before we had the preliminary draft, we showed up the policies and goals that we had in our initial run. Each ward office hosted one of our events for those. And then there were also pop-up events, so like community events that happened across the city that we were tabling at. So not all of those are listed on this map.
Yeah, Commissioner Lampo, I do want to clarify. Yeah, so phase two, we did every ward. I believe it was at the Clements Center. So I believe that could actually be a typo that we need to fix within the, yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Well, it looks like we have reached the completion of our discussion on the item. I would like to open this up for a motion to set the Planning Commission public hearing for Plan Tucson 2025 on March 5th, 2025. Can I get a motion?
Commissioner, sorry, Chair, for March 12th, if we could.
Okay. March 12th. Thank you.
My apologies.
I'll make a motion to set the first public hearing for Plan Tucson for March 12th, 2025.
Okay, I have a motion.
I'll second the motion.
Real quickly, I think the goal is to hold 2 public hearings, so it'd be March 12th and March 19th.
Okay. I'll restate it again. Should we say where we're going to have them? I guess that could have been part of the discussion because we need to know where they're going to be held.
Sure. So we have We have booked a room at the Ward 2 office for the March 12th public hearing or proposed public hearing, and then for the March 19th here at City Hall. These are also both hybrid meetings.
So March 12th and March 19th. Okay, I'll make a motion to set an agenda item for Plan Tucson public hearing for meetings on March 12th and March 19th for the two required public meetings.
Wonderful.
I'll second that motion.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor of setting the Planning Commission public hearing for March 12th and 19th?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye.
And any nays? Okay, looks like the motion passes.
Really quick, and this is a little bit of a contentious thing. So I said public meeting, not public hearing. It's a public hearing. Right. So
that is correct.
Should we repeat that? That's recorded. Okay. Perfect.
Public hearings, March 12th and 19th. Okay. We are set. Thank you all.
Thank you, commissioners.
Okay. Item number 5, staff announcements.
No additional announcements this evening.
All right. Moving on to future agenda items.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Ortiz-Pino. We have the Community Corridors Tool public hearing that's scheduled for February 26th. And then the two public hearings for Plan Tucson, which I'll repeat again, on March 12th and March 19th, at first one at the Ward 2 office, the second one here, coming up in the near future. So thanks.
Great. Thank you. Now I'd like to call item number 7, call to the audience. Anybody online or in this vast crowd of ours? Okay. Don't think I'll bother reading the caption there. Moving on to item number 8, call to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Motion?
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Thank you all very much.
All right. Thank you all.